When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Jaden Sterling, international best-selling author of the award-winning book, The Alchemy of True Success. And welcome to Soul to Profit Radio, where my guests and I share tips and strategies to help you, the enlightened entrepreneur, take your business to the next level. So make sure you grab paper and pen to write down these amazing tips and strategies that we're going to share with you to help you fill your soul and your wallet. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Soul to Profit Radio. I'm your host, Jaden Sterling, and it's a beautiful day today, May 7th, Wednesday, and we are live on the air. I have a very special guest today. Today, you know, we're really going to get into this topic about money and working with our kids and our families so that we're working toward the same goals, and we are also working toward having abundance in our lives. And I have a really neat guest on today who's going to share, Danny Kofke is going to share tips and strategies as to how he does it with his family. Danny is a special education teacher out of Georgia. He's also the author of two personal finance books. One is A Simple Book of Financial Wisdom, Teach Yourself and Your Kids How to Live Wealthy with Little Money. And I enjoyed that book. I finished it up last night. That was a really fun read. And his second book is How to Survive and Perhaps Thrive on a Teacher's Salary. And he's also working on a third book called Mini Millionaires, Teaching Kids How to Win with Money, currently being published by Wyatt McKenzie Publishing House. Danny has appeared on numerous television shows, including Fox and Friends, Fox News Channels, the CBS Early Show, CNN Newsroom, 700 Club, CNN Your Bottom Line Show, Fox News Channels, America's News and Company, and many, many, many others. He's also been written up in USA Today. He's been featured on Yahoo.com, Money Magazine, Parade, Instructor Magazine, CBS Money Watch. I mean, the list goes on and on. So this guy knows how to get publicity, and we're also going to talk to him about that today as well. So, Danny, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jaden. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're welcome. Where are you calling in from?
Outside of Atlanta, about 45 minutes outside of Atlanta.
Good. You guys having some decent weather there these days?
Yeah, spring is kind of come and gone, I think. It feels like summer today, but that's okay. We've had a pretty cold winter like everyone else in the country, so no complaints here.
Yeah, awesome. Good. Well, I was looking forward to having you on the show. Like I said, I enjoyed reading your book, and, you know, it does seem like we can make, you know, maybe it seems like sort of simple things to do, but really powerful things when you start to put paper to pen and look at what's coming in versus what's going out. So how did you and your family start on your journey of having financial freedom?
Gosh, I really think the key was having a plan in place. And I think that, or having a plan and wanting to achieve some goals. And at the time when we first kind of started off, my wife, Tracy, was a school teacher, and I was a teacher as well. And this was back, I guess, in 99 when we met. And we, you know, after we got engaged and got married, we discussed having kids one day. And we felt strongly about Tracy being able to stay at home and raise our children. We weren't sure how many kids we were going to have, didn't know how long, but we felt confident in the fact that we really wanted her to stay home at least 1 year. So we planned for that. On teacher salaries, we lived pretty much off of one salary, and we paid off debt with the other one. And when that was done, we invested in an emergency fund and just kept setting that up and to build that buffer. Well, that plan enabled us eventually that Tracy was actually able to stay home 9 years. We have two daughters, so she was able to stay home until both of them were in school, and actually she just got back into the classroom this past August. There was an opening at the school where I teach and also where both of my girls go. My oldest daughter, Ava's in fourth, and my youngest, Ella's in first grade. So we're all together at the same school, elementary school. So it's just kind of a good opportunity for us just to kind of add more to that emergency fund now and build it back up, because living on, you know, $40,000 a year for 9 years, raising two daughters, we still have some savings, but it's going to go. So we're just kind of looking ahead towards the future and building it back up. But most importantly, I think going back to what enabled us to do this, it was making a plan and sticking to it, because there's so many people that, you know, it's very, very easy to give in to temptation. And we live in a society where it's, I see it, I want it, I'm going to buy it right now. And a lot of times we do not think about the future ramifications of those decisions. Whereas Tracy and I, we had our eyes on a bigger prize, because we had that plan in place that we wanted her to stay at home. Anytime we would be offered the chance to do something, a frivolous decision, we would weigh it. Okay, and I'm not saying we never did anything fun during that time when we were building up our savings. I mean, we did some cool things, traveled and other stuff, but we were smart about it. And I think the key was we did have that plan, and we always weighed it. Okay, if we do this, well then, okay, the plans may change a little bit. It's going to take a little bit longer to hit that goal. So that was, I think, the biggest key, is we had a plan in place and goals in mind so we could achieve them. Because if you don't have a plan in place or a destination in mind, you're never going to get there. So that was probably the biggest key for us.
Yeah, I like that. And I liked in your book, you know, reading that early on you were more a bit more thrifty than your wife. And then as mm-hmm. you developed this plan together, she definitely got on board. And now the pendulum, it sounded like the pendulum kind of swung the other way, where she became even more thrifty, or, you know, even rather than use that word thrifty, but more aware, right? What made that change happen?
Well, I think what happened is that she was so content with being a stay-at-home mom, and she knew, all right, we, you know, as a teacher, I make about 40 grand a year. So she knew if we spend more than $40,000 a year, well, she's going to have to get a job. And we used to kid about it all the time, but there would be times she'd say, okay, I want this, or it'd be nice to have that. And I would always say, well, you can have anything you want, you just have to go get a job. You know, and we kind of kid and joked about it, but that basically was kind of the reality, because there's only a few ways to make more money. Either A, I would have to get out of teaching and go get another job, which she enjoys having me around. I'm one of those few wives that likes her husband, I guess, but she enjoys having me around. And teacher's hours, I do have time off to spend with my family and my daughters and with her. So we like that option. I could have gone and gotten a second job, which then I would really never see my family, because I'd be working two jobs. Or three, she could go get a full-time job, which would put her outside of the home. And that leaves the last option, which was cut back on what we're spending money on and be careful. And that's kind of the option that we chose. And I will tell you, since making that decision a number of years ago to just be very conscious of what we're doing with our money, there has not been one materialistic item that we've missed. And we're like anyone else. I mean, don't get me wrong. If I'm leave school today and a guy pulls up next to me in a convertible Beamer, of course I want it. I mean, everyone does, but I weigh the options and I say, okay, if I want this, I can have this, but this is what's going to happen. And I think that thinking right there is what led to the financial downfall, or that lack of thinking led to the financial downfall of, you know, many countries, is that a lot of people did not think, okay, if I do action A, then the consequence is going to be B. If I buy a $500,000 home, even though I only make $80,000 a year, well, then down the road, something's going to happen. And I think that's where the thinking kind of got skewed, but that's where we are as a society. Like I mentioned before, it's I see it, I want it, I'm going to buy it. And I think for us, since we had our eyes on that bigger prize, we always weighed our decisions.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful, weighing the decisions and being faithful to the plan that you put in place. And it really seems like, do you feel like that brought you and your wife closer together?
Oh, absolutely. I've given talks before to people about money, and money is not everything. Money is not the end-all, be-all. But man, it can really mess up your life if you don't gain control of it. Money is probably, I've read studies, the leading cause of divorce. And I don't necessarily think it's the money itself, but I think a lot of times it's the straw that breaks the camel's back. In my life, like I mentioned, Tracy went back to work this year full time as a teacher, and our lives have done a complete, it's so different than it has been the past 9 years. We are crazy busy. She comes home exhausted. We're both tired. It's life. And I know many people, I'm preaching to the choir. A lot of people are in that same situation where life is just so crazy. And I think about with us and how crazy that is and throwing money issues on top of that. I could not imagine if I had debt collectors calling my house, at night when I'm trying to get some rest, or just that constant stress of that debt weighing over us, knowing I owe someone money, that I can see exactly why their marriages fall apart. And I think money, it's not the main issue, but it's just one of those things that it just takes its toll and it's draining. And we're always focused on it. When you're in debt, it's kind of hard to think about other things because you owe someone something. And for most of us, that's an uneasy feeling going to bed at night. It would consume a lot of my thoughts, which then not enabled me to be the person that God has created me to be, because I'd be worrying. So that's where I can kind of see, for us, it definitely strengthened our marriage because we were on the same page and we worked towards goals together. And as a couple, when you accomplish things together, gosh, it just builds such a wonderful bond. And there's, we know we can accomplish things together, and that's priceless.
Oh yeah, that's so powerful. And I've often said that we're not here to worry about money. That's not why we're put on earth. We're here for a much larger purpose. And mm-hmm. But you're right. It's something that we have to interact with on a daily basis. It's one of those things that presides over our life, and we're either controlling it or it's controlling us.
Right. So, I've talked to people before, and they'll tell me, oh, money is evil. Money is amoral. Money has no feeling whatsoever. It's what we do with it, and money has done great things. It's built schools. It's built orphanages. It's built great churches. But at the same time, money has also done very bad things. So that's what I try to tell people. Money, it has no feeling. It's what we attach to it.
Oh, agreed. It's neutral. I always say its energy mm-hmm. is neutral. It's the person behind the money, what their intention is, to do with it. But, it's also one of those things that if you don't get a handle on it early on, it can pretty much handle you. And because society is structured in a way that credit, as you mentioned in your book, credit's very easy to get for these college kids. And I was shocked to hear mm-hmm. that on average, a student graduating from college has, about $4,100 in credit card debt already.
Right, credit card debt. Mm-hmm. And that's changed a little bit because there was that new Credit Card Reform Act, but I still know that college kids can still get it. And that's the thing, for me, and that's why I wrote the book that will be coming out Labor Day about teaching kids how to win with money, because first off, as a school teacher, I see it every day. We do a horrible job of teaching financial literacy, and I know why. I mean, it's not tested, and I understand that completely. But saying that, I thought, golly, there is such a drastic need for parents to understand how to do this, because if they don't, they're going to have their kids living in their basement until they're 33, 34. The world is changing, and we don't want that. So kids just, it's hard for an 18-year-old. You go to college, you get that free T-shirt, and then here's a card that you can spend $5,000 on, and you don't have to worry about paying it back until you graduate and you get a job. Well, most 18-year-olds are going to jump at that opportunity because they're not thinking about the interest that they're going to be paying on that card. They're thinking Friday night, and that's all they care about. So that's where, we do a lousy job as a society in general of teaching about interest and credit card debt, and even on the other side, the compound interest, and when you have interest working for you. So it is. It's such a drastic need. And unfortunately, a lot of our students, they don't get it at school. So as parents, you have to be the one to teach it so that your child does not make the mistakes that so many of us have made.
Yeah, and I loved when you said in your book, you were talking about your daughter, I think it's your younger daughter, Ava, is that right?
Well, she's the oldest, Ella. Or Ella's the youngest, Ava's the oldest.
Okay, so which was the one that you started her around 4 years old with the allowance, and then you shifted that a bit too so that it became an automatic You didn't want to associate a task with making money.
Right. And yeah, that, I mean, we started both girls at actually age 3 with chores, basic chores, and they would divide it into giveaway jars, savings jar, and spending jars. But yeah, then after, once Ava got to be, my oldest one got to be 6, we started making her work a little bit harder for it. And it just wasn't, she didn't get paid for just doing, you know, cleaning her room and things like that. She actually had to work for it, clean her bathroom, scrub the toilet, things like that, just to show her that, you know what, in life, if you go above and beyond, and I think, you know, most 5-6-year-olds aren't scrubbing their toilet, you'll get rewarded. So we actually increased her allowance a little bit because she was working harder. And I will say, now that she is 9, that has turned into, we started thinking outside the box a couple months ago about ways for her to earn money outside of the home. Because, I mean, I don't mind paying my kids a commission or an allowance, but, you know, I'm kind of frugal. And I thought, you know, maybe there's a way you can earn money not just from me, but from somewhere else. And she's a pretty gifted writer, won a couple of writing awards at school. And since I had some ties with the publishing industry, she actually wrote a book about what she has learned about money from a 9-year-old's perspective. And we have a traditional published book coming out in September along with my new one. So she signed with my same publishing company, but she doesn't have to pay anything at all. So she's going to be a published author. She'll be 10 at that point, but then she'll have some money coming in. And that's, you know, what I already told her. And this is where kids can really win. So let's just say if you made some money with this book, and we just take $250, that's it, when you're 10 years old, that's all we take, and I invest that in a good mutual fund for you, and we're going to say it grows 10% a year, which is the average. That's the stock market average. If you don't touch just $250 until you're 70 years old, that will be worth almost $100,000 from just $250. So that's, you know, kind of with what we try to do.
Compounded interest.
Compound interest at its best. So that, you know, what we try to do when you start when they're young, when you start at 3 and 4 and just kind of instill some basic money habits in them. And what we did, I mean, just very easy. When they got paid for their chores, they only got paid like $1 a week, so not a lot. But automatically 10% or a dime would go in the giveaway jar, 25% or 25 cents a quarter would go in the savings jar, and the rest would go in the spending jar. And if we as adults just followed those principles, gave away 10%, saved 25%, spent the rest, we would not be in the financial crisis that so many of us are facing right now. And that's right. You know, it's that simple. I know it's hard when we try to play it out, emotions get involved, real life happens, but on paper, it's not that hard. And that's, you know, to me, what interests me so much about money issues is that it really, it's not a complicated formula, and so many people try to make it out to be. Basically, spend less than you earn. When you do that, you will always have money.
Yeah. Oh, I love what you just said. So, a couple of things. I definitely want your daughter on my radio show.
Oh, cool.
So that'll be fun when her book comes out. We'll get her on here and would love to hear her perspective of, you know, what she has experienced, because we have 2 kids and right around her age. So that would be fun to hear that. And also, yeah, the other thing is I like what you said about the keeping 10%. So that's the keep jar or giveaway jar, 10%.
Mm-hmm. And that keeps us grounded, I think. And that's the thing, too, because, I mean, it's easy to look around and say, gosh, they have more than we do. We look around and almost everyone, unless you're the richest person on the face of Earth, which is one person, everyone can say someone has more than I do. But at the same token, there's so many people that have a lot less. And I think that giveaway, that just kind of keeps it in proper perspective, that you can always see, you know what, yeah, I can complain right now, I don't have as nice of a car as someone, this is down the road, I don't have as big of a house, but you know what, I got more than a lot of other people do.
Yeah, and it's also really rewarding when we're giving to others, you know, like your daughter was able to experience buying the canned goods and bringing them into the food drive, right, and giving that way, and kids are natural givers anyway. They love to give. So I think as we get older and into adulthood, it, you know, we tend to pull back with that a little bit because we think, well, I need to spend everything that I make, and that
right.
ultimately ends what ends up happening. So we're out of Canada up here, and I know you're in the States, and I come from the States, so I'm very familiar with the Roth IRAs and things that you're referring to. And for folks who are, let's say, entrepreneurs who don't have the ability to, where an employer takes 10% out of their paycheck to set aside. What do you recommend for people in that situation?
Oh, I recommend, and I don't even have my employer do that. I do a Roth IRA, and I don't know up in Canada. I guess you probably can. I think they're – I'm not exactly sure. I guess you'd have to check the tax laws and stuff. But, you know, there are a lot of differences. Just basic, if you work for an employer, here in the States we have what's called a 401k, or as a teacher it's a 403b since we're a nonprofit. But what it is basically you're investing money before the taxes are taken out. So very easily, let's just say you're in the 20% income tax bracket, and let's just say you made $1,000 a month. Well, if you decided to invest $100 a month, really, in all actuality, you're only going to miss $80 a month out of your paycheck because this money is taken out before you're taxed on it. So it's just invested, and the thing is, though, with a 401k, 403b, when you do retire and you collect that money, that's when you're paying the tax. So you kind of get hit at the other end. This is in the States, at the other end. With a Roth IRA, and that's what I use, the money is invested after it's been taxed. So like it's taken out of our debit account or checking account. But the cool thing about a Roth IRA is the money grows tax-free. So when I take it out when I retire, any interest, compound interest it has earned, I won't be taxed on it. Since I've already paid my taxes now, whatever I earn, I get to take out, and it's all mine. So it's just either way, I think, are fine ways to build wealth. The important thing is that you start. And I, like I said, I'm not sure exactly in Canada they do have – I'm sure they have some version of a Roth IRA or 401k. But the important thing is to start and just save over time. I just gave an easy example or brief example of how compound interest can work. But it really is so, so magical. It's the complete opposite of credit card interest. You know, if you put $5,000 on a credit card that has 24% interest, you make the minimum monthly payments. By the time you're done paying off that card, you'll have spent almost $20,000 because of the interest on it. The same holds true with when you invest and you have interest working for you, that it just builds over time. It's interest built on interest that you've already earned. So it compounds so fast, and that is how most people earn their wealth. When you talk to the average school teacher, the average police officer, firefighter, whatever, most of them just invest dollar cost average, invest a set amount each month. You do that for 30, 40 years, and then you're usually able to retire with a nice nest egg.
Yeah, and you've also exercised some discipline and self-control along the way, right? It's it's weighing out, do I want that new iPod? Do I want that new iPad? Or, you know, can I keep the one that I currently have?
Right.
And save the money.
And the thing
put
is,
that money into
yeah, it, and a lot of people, unfortunately, and I don't know, like I said, the situation up there in your country, but here in the States, and you've probably read about it, I mean, our government, we don't have as much money anymore. I mean, they mismanage a lot of money, so I personally don't want to depend on them to take care of me. I feel strongly that we have Social Security here, and I'm sure I feel that it will probably, some form of it will be here when I retire, but I personally don't want to solely depend on that. I want that to be an added bonus and invest my money so I can take care of myself. And then if Social Security is still there, which, you know, it should be, but if it is, it's just added to what I'm already invested in, which money I have coming in. So to me, I just want, it helps me sleep better at night to know that I am investing for our future and I'm not depending on someone else to take care of me when I can no longer work.
Yeah, and that dovetails nicely into what you said in your book. The book, A Simple Book of Financial Wisdom, Teach Yourself and Your Kids How to Live Wealthy with Little Money. You said to put your retirement needs ahead of your kids' tuition needs. Now, why did you make that statement?
And I'll say, having two daughters, I do not want them to have student loan debt. I want them to be able to go to college and not have to worry about that, and we invest some for their college, but Tracy and I invest for ourselves first because there is such a thing as a student loan. Like I mentioned, I don't want them to have to get it, but they could get one. They could, I know, hold your breath, get a job while they're in college and work some to help pay for that. There's other options. When you retire and you're no longer able to work, there's no such thing as a retirement loan. So we have to invest for ourselves first because if we don't, and the flip side, let's just say I solely invested in my kids' college funds, and I was able to send them both to Harvard and Yale, best colleges on earth. They graduate with honors. They go out, and they get the greatest jobs. They're making a lot of money. They start a family. Life as well. Well, I come into work one day, and I get laid off when I'm in my upper 50s. I have no retirement savings. Well, I'm going to have to go knock on their doors, and I'm going to have to live with them. And I personally, I would hope they would take me with open arms. I try to be a good dad. So, you know, if that ever happened, hopefully they'd be okay with it. But I don't want to be that burden to my kids. I do not want to have to go and live with them when I get older. I think when they're just starting out their lives, they're going to start having my grandkids and things like that. I don't want to be a burden to them. So that's why I say we have to invest for ourselves first. Than we do for our kids. And I know as parents it's really, really hard because we put our children's needs above ours for pretty much everything. But this is one instance where you may think that you're putting your needs above theirs, but in actuality, with my rationale, you're doing it for them because you do not want to be that burden to them in life. You want to be able to be independent for as long as your health allows and not have to be with them to have them take care of you when they're just starting out on their lives.
Yeah, that's powerful, Danny, and I really liked what you said. There are no loans for retirement, so that means it puts the burden right back on our shoulders that, you know, and I think it's a quote I remember. See, my background's in finance. I was a Merrill Lynch financial consultant for Merrill Lynch during the decade of my 20s, and, mm-hmm. and I remember at that time I heard that 9 out of 10 people by age 65 end up dead, broke, or hugely financially dependent on a family member. That's 9 out mm-hmm. of 10 people. That's 90% of the population. So we know, right. like you said, based on simple compound interest, start putting some money away today, and over time that will grow as long as it's invested properly in a good quality, like you say, mutual fund, or if mm-hmm. someone has the savvy to buy individual stocks is great too. And then more powerfully in a tax-deferred environment, which, like you say, a Roth IRA in the States or a 401k plan or in Canada, an RSP. So there are many options for us to defer taxes and to grow our money tax-deferred, and that's really, really powerful. That can't be underestimated, the power of that. So tell me, where can we start with our kids? Like, let's say, you know, you have two kids and you've never really sat down with them. As we know, there are two things that generally weren't talked about as you and I grew up during our childhoods, and money was one of them. So what do we do now?
I think the most important thing is we just have to be open and honest with our children. And I've talked to my former pastor, and he'll say, you know, people come to me and they talk about sex issues and infidelity and drug issues, but they're still ashamed to talk about money. And I think that is so unfortunate, and that's where we as parents go wrong. We're afraid to talk about money with our kids because if we've messed up, we're embarrassed by our mistakes, or we don't want to show them the mistakes we've made to make them have to worry. And I think that, to me, the number one thing we can do is just to be open and honest. If you're a parent and you've messed up, made a stupid money mistake decision, tell your kids. What child doesn't love to hear that their parents messed up? But then you tell them, you know what? I am not perfect. There was only one perfect person, and he died over 2,000 years ago, and no one is perfect. And in life, you're going to make mistakes. The important thing is that you learn from those mistakes, and as you go forward, you do not repeat them. And I think it's such an awesome way to teach your children. If you've done, you know, bought a brand new car, for instance, say, you know what? Look at this. I bought this brand new car, but every single month, I lost $400 in depreciation. That's like going down the road every single week, taking $100 and throwing it out the window. Things like that we can be open and honest with so they can understand it. And another thing, you know, what I do with, and as they get a little bit older, like I said, my oldest is 9 now, so she's able to understand it a little more, but, you know, like the kids see stuff and they want it. And they don't understand, why can't I have that? Why? And there's times I said no, so no is no, and you're not going to have it because I said so. But I also also like to show rationale sometimes too, and I'll say, look, let's sit down. Here is my paycheck and how much I earn. Here are our bills. I pay this month for the mortgage. This is what our TV is. This is electric, and I go through them. I say, subtract how much I make with how much our bills are, and this is how much we have left over. Now, with this leftover money, we still have to buy food. We have to buy gas, and just list it so they can kind of see firsthand, too, okay, you have your money, and money goes towards a certain thing. Dad, Mom, they're not just telling me no because they're being mean. They're telling me no for a reason. And then, you know, to improve on that even more and elaborate, tell them about some of your goals in life. You know, well, we hope to have $10,000 in this emergency fund, and we're building towards that. That way, one day when we need a new roof, because if we live in this house long enough, guess what? We're going to need a new roof. We're going to need a new air conditioner heat unit. Our car, if we drive it long enough, we're going to need new tires on it. Things happen, so we have to be prepared. So I think that's where, as parents, we just have to be really open and honest with our children and tell them what we want our money to do and why we are doing those things, so they can at least hear that language. And they may not get it completely, but I guarantee you, as they get older, they're going to remember that. And just an easy, you know, was something that it shocked me this past year, and it shows how much kids listen. Ava, my 9-year-old, we were going to school, and Tracy had to take in her car. And we don't use our credit card much, but as teachers, we get paid at the end of each month. So instead of transferring money over continuously during the month, sometimes we'll just put a purchase on the credit card, and then at the end of the month, I just make one transfer over so I don't have to constantly do that to pay it off. So, you know, if we use a credit card, we know we have money to cover it. So I explained to her, well, Tracy was taking her car actually to get service, and I said, why don't you just use the credit card? So we're driving to school, and Ava's like, Dad, I thought credit cards were bad to use. And I said, well, they are for many people. I said, but, you know, I explained how Mommy and I, you know, use ours, and we have the money to cover for it. And she goes, but you really shouldn't use credit cards much, should you? Because, and then she even said, she goes, if most people, if they use credit cards, they'll probably get kicked out of their house because they won't have enough money to pay for it. And, you know, I didn't really correct her because I thought, wow, what a great insight for a 9-year-old to think that, you know, it may not be 100% true, but I guarantee you that if you never use credit cards, you're probably going to end up not getting kicked out of your house because you're going to have money to pay for it. So I didn't correct that, but it just showed me that she's really listening, and kids can understand a lot more than we give them credit for. And I mean, just sit down with any 5-year-old and give them a new video game. They have that thing figured out in like 15 minutes, and it takes us, you know, 3 hours. We don't even know what we're doing with it. So kids are like sponges, and they just soak up so much. So I would just say, just have open and honest dialogue with them about money. And like I mentioned, if you've messed up, tell them that. Show them how you messed up. Explain the way you messed up, but then how you're not going to do it again in the future.
Yeah, powerful. So honesty and full disclosure. That's what I heard you say.
Yes, definitely. Now, I will throw some. If you're struggling and, you know, you're facing bankruptcy, or you think you're going to get, you know, foreclosed on your home, okay, then we're not going to scare a kid. We don't want to, you know, do things like that. Maybe after this storm passes and you're back on your feet again and things are looking up, then explain that decision. We don't want to scare them if they're going to face some dire times, you know, in the near future or some major change for them. But I think for most of us, when we do make those minor little mistakes like buying a new car or buying a purchase, you know, something that really could have waited, that you just thought, oh, I have to have it now, I think those are great opportunities to teach your children.
Yeah, and it's empowering too, because you're saying to your child as you reveal this information, you know, like you're saying, you're sitting down with your daughter and you have your paycheck in hand and you're like, all right, this is what's coming in, this is what's going out, and this is why you can't have that brand new Nintendo or whatever it is that they want. And you know, that's really empowering, and it also is teaching them such incredible skills for them to take as they go out into, quote-unquote, the real world, you know, as they grow up and find themselves out there working and having to balance a checkbook and have some real responsibility.
Well, and it makes them kind of, and that was part of the spark of Ava writing her own book. Part of that was she wanted a laptop. And I said, hold on. I said, I should work hard, do what I do, to buy you a laptop so you can sit here and play Minecraft or some of your games. I said, no. I said, if you want a computer, you think of a way that you can buy it. You can continue doing chores. That's going to take you a long time, but maybe there's a skill you have. So I kind of hinted around, you're good at writing books. I kind of led her there, but it was a great motivating factor for her, because just the other day she's like, Dad, can I buy an Xbox? And I'm like, you know what? Said, we're going to give away 10%. I'm actually this time going to invest 10% of this money. We're going to save some of it. The rest of it is spending money. You can buy with it. I mean, you know, discretion, but most things that you want, if you make enough money. But see, then I'm teaching her now, when her book does come out, I want, you know, her to promote it. I want her to actively go and speak to other students so she can sell it, because that's the thing. Most of us are motivated by money to buy something, whether it's a peace of mind, whether it's a piece of equipment, whatever it may be. Money is a pretty big motivator for a lot of people, but when you can use it in the right ways, and that's kind of what I'm trying to instill right now in a 9-year-old, it's just like, look, man, if you want something, well, we first think outside the box, but then once you have it come out, if you really want to make it successful, then you're going to have to work hard at it. You're going to have to go talk to people. You're not going to be shy. You're going to have to go give presentations if it means this much to you. So I think, you know, when you do discuss money issues with your kids, it can open up so many other great lifelong lessons that you can instill just from that simple topic of earning money.
Oh, yeah. And I really like what you said to her, which is, you know, you could save up your allowance, but that's going to take you a long time. Or you can get creative, find other ways, you know, tap into what your gifts are and share them with others, and that's really a phenomenal way for her to get more money and then therefore be able to buy what she wants to buy. That's awesome, Danny.
Right.
That's really neat. And had you gone out and bought her that laptop, she wouldn't have the same pride and same joy that she would the day she goes out with her own money to buy that laptop.
No, and I remember from my parents taught me a valuable lesson is, you know, when I was 15, my motivation was a car, and they said, we will match you 100% whatever money you earn towards that. So I worked when I was 15 years old, and we lived in Florida at the time, South Florida, so all summer in the hot Florida sun, I delivered and set up appliances. So, you know, by 10 o'clock, it's 90 degrees. The humidity's just baking. It's miserable. And I'm out there busting my tail to earn money. My friends are at the beach. And I tell you, I saved up $2,000. My parents matched that. I was able to buy a truck, and I treated that like it was a Rolls Royce. It wasn't anything nice, but I waxed it. I washed it. I was so proud of it because I knew, you know what, I spent a lot of time working for this thing and how much sweat went into it. Whereas I had friends that didn't have to work. They were at the beach all summer. They were enjoying it. Their parents bought them cars. They could have cared less. They trashed them. They didn't ever clean them. They didn't take care of it because there was no vested interest in it for them. So that was, you know, for me, I was very fortunate that my parents taught me that lesson, that yes, they were kind to give me money for my car, and I appreciate that. But most importantly, they made me work to earn some of the money to purchase it, because you're so right. When you earn something yourself by your own sweat and hard work, gosh, it just means so much more to you than if something's just given to you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, you know, I always ask each guest, boy, the show is just flying by, and I want to get to a really important question that I'd love to hear from you, your feedback, because this show is Soul to Profit Radio, and each guest shares a tip or strategy that they felt created a huge impact for their business. And with you, I'd like you to talk a little bit about, and I know you don't have a PR firm representing you, and on your own, you have literally been booked by the best radio and television shows out there. How did you do it?
Perseverance. Unwilling to just take no for an answer a lot of times, and just perseverance. And it took a number of years. My first book came out in October of 2007. I did not get booked on my first national television show until January of 2010. So that was over 2 years of pitching, getting, you know, people not responding, getting emails back saying, you know, it's not a fit, but just sticking with it. I thought I had a powerful message to share. Fortunately for me, the timing was right. The economy took a nosedive, and here was a real-life example of school teacher raising his family on a 40 grand a year, stay-at-home mom, so all those things. But just being willing to step outside the box, share my story, and sticking with it. And I will tell you, it has opened so many doors for me. And there's doors in the future that are going to open that I don't even know about right now. So that is what I would say. If you have a product that you believe in, and I believe that I can help people with my message, so naturally I want to share it. And money follows. I'm still a teacher by day. That's what pays the checks. Maybe one day I'll be able to live off just helping people manage money better. That's a dream of mine to be able to do that. Right now that's not a reality, but I'm going to still stick with it and work towards it. And I do feel that God provides. When you when you're working in the gifts that He has given you and you're pushing it, I do feel that doors open because of that. So that's what I would say. Just persevere. Just stick with it. If you have a dream, just keep going for it. Don't let people tell you no. And baby steps. It may not happen overnight. You know, I dreamed about getting on national television right when my first book came out. But honestly, I wouldn't have been ready for it. I would have probably flubbed my words and been nervous. So practice. Over those 2.5 years before I appeared on national TV, probably did 200 radio interviews, and I was able to hone my craft. So then that way, when the cameras were on, I wasn't nervous, didn't get stage fright. So I will say, too, if you're trying to take off and something just is going a little bit slower, that's okay. Just relish that moment and just practice and hone that craft because, man, it will happen one day. And then once it does, it's full speed ahead. So just, sometimes slow down and smell the flowers and just, enjoy the moment and learn from it.
Wow, that's great advice, Danny. That's fantastic. Well, you are a gem of a guest. Thank you for coming on the show today. And please tell our listeners real quickly, your third book, when is that coming out?
That is scheduled for beginning of September. So Labor Day weekend is when, right now it's scheduled to come out. But I'll definitely, I'll get back in touch with you and then maybe we could do it again, have my daughter and myself on again. So
that would be fun. Let's definitely do that right around that time. We'll have you back on the show. And also tell our listeners, where is the best place they can go to find out about you and your work?
Probably the easiest way, if you just Google my name, so Danny Kofke, D-A-N-N-Y-K-O-F as in Frank, K-E. Usually the first thing that pops up is my blog page, dannykofke.blogspot.com, and on there, direct links to order my book, email me, and see some of my various media appearances as well.
Excellent. Excellent, Danny. Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you for your time and your energy, and you're doing some great work out there. I appreciate you, and we'll look forward to having you back on the show.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me on, Jaden. I enjoyed talking to you and hope I was able to help your listeners.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks. All right, friends. Well, there you heard it. Danny calling in from the Georgia area had some great advice about children and money. And like he said, start now. That's big. We got to start now. There's no time like the present. Put some money aside, learn that habit and that skill of not spending all the money that you make and definitely not spending more than you make. I think that's the biggest point that Danny stressed, and I agree with him, is that we need to really learn to live within our means and not spend above that, and then also learn to then save some money along the way and grow that in investments, good quality investments, mutual funds, individual stocks, whatever that can look like is certainly a huge added advantage and a great way to go. So, okay, this Saturday, also many of you know that Spring Fling with the Angels, our event Cindy Smith and I are hosting in Calgary, is on. It's this Saturday, May 10th. It's going to be an incredible day. We already have 160 tickets sold, so there are still tickets available, but not many. We need to get the final numbers in, so we urge you, if you do want to go to the event, it'll be a fantastic day to spend with like-minded friends, new friends and old friends. I'm sure if you're spiritual and have know our work that you'll know plenty of people at the event, and you can go to cindysmithaep.com for more information. Again, that's cindysmithaep.com for more information. And also want to share with you, next week I have a fantastic guest going to be on the show. Her name is Diane Collins. She's the author of Quantum Think, and Diane is an original thinker and one of the foremost thought leaders of our time. She consults with executives in the world's leading corporations as well as with enterprising entrepreneurs, celebrities, students, and others. In the new system of thinking, she's created Quantum Think. Her life is dedicated to people living spirited, joyful, and masterful lives through leaps in awareness and the expansion of their relationship to reality. She's a master of translating ancient knowledge into modern, quote, quantum terms that provide a practical and transformative platform for the way we conduct our business and personal affairs. I think you're going to love hearing what Diane has to say. As you know, and you've heard me say, this is an incredibly transformative time that we're in. Miracles are happening. Transformations are taking place. Changes are happening for people. You know, things that people have struggled with for decades, health issues, issues in being stuck in way of thinking and not being able to change. Well, now that energy is available to you to make those incredible life transformations. And Diane's going to talk with us about that. She's fantastic. You'll want to check out some of her YouTube videos. That's Diane, two N's, and Collins, two L's in her last name. I also want to wish all of you who have a mother or who are mothers a very happy Mother's Day this coming Sunday. And I'm wishing my mom over in the spiritual realm a very happy day and my lovely wife a happy Mother's Day. And I hope all of you have a fantastic day. Enjoy it. Spend it with your loved ones. And we will see you next week on Soul to Profit Radio. My host, my guest again next week is Diane Collins. I'm your host, Jaden Sterling. To find out more about my work, please visit Jaden Sterling, J-A-D-E-N, Sterling. com. Thanks, everyone. Remember, fill your soul and your wallet this week. Take care. Bye-bye.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.